First of all, I'm very excited that you're here with me because I think it's great to be able to communicate across, multiple geographic areas and share our ideas together. So thank you very much for coming. So I'm going to talk about a couple of the key points of the Robert Pace approach, starting with number one is comprehensive musicianship. This is the balanced study of technique, theory, ear training, harmonization, writing, improvising, transposing, sight reading, and repertoire, all within the structure of the repertoire that the students are working on. Number two is the conceptual approach. Music is presented in simple concepts which can be reapplied and expanded upon in an upward spiral as study progresses. So you learn a simple concept, and then you learn something more about that concept in the next level that you're studying. Once you learn a concept, you continue to see how that concept applies to the next piece and the next piece and the next piece, forever up the spiral. Number three is the element of peer learning and teaching. This is that students can learn from each other, and that working in groups sets up a healthy atmosphere of exchange of ideas and collaborative music making, and that at an early level we can learn to be collaborative music makers, and that by teaching each other they can clarify what they themselves know and better analyze their own learning. Number four is teaching for thinking, that we teach how to analyze what has to be done, prescribe a means to accomplish it, and evaluate our progress. In other words, we teach students how to practice so that they can maximize their practice on every day of the week and grow on their own terms. And number so those are some of the basic primary exciting components of the PACE approach. Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Very clear.
Does it resonate with you? That's why you're here.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Working in groups allows more lesson time, so you have time to include all of these comprehensive elements. People are always saying, you know, this is great, but how can we fit it all in? So the truth is it's always difficult to fit it all in, but we have a better chance with a little longer lesson time. It also gives a chance to play games to reinforce the fundamentals like note names and chords and key signatures and intervals and rhythm patterns and all those things that are just, you know, so much more fun to learn if you can put them in a game. It also gives you a chance to see things when you're doing a game from a different perspective than simply sitting at the keyboard all the time with your hands over the keys. You know, you step away from the piano and you see things on the board or on flashcards, or work with manipulative items while you're working. This brings in different learning modes of each student and perhaps addresses what their learning mode is best, whether it's visual, tactile, or oral. So there's a lot of reinforcement from many different ways. In our question and answer improvisation exercises, which are, you know, highly prevalent in the PACE method, we learn to think on our own feet, on our feet, to keep going, and we come to the realization that things often seem easier when someone else is doing them. Mm-hmm. You know how it is when you hear somebody and you trying to think of an answer and you know, it's clear to you, but then as soon as you're on the spot, you kind of freeze up. And so have you ever had that happen to you?
Of course.
So you get, not only a musical realization, but a life realization that things are always not as clear when you're the one who's on the spot. So you develop a healthy respect for others and, their perspectives. In a group, students learn to recognize and celebrate the individual talents of each student. So students may excel in different aspects of music. In one group, one student may be great at playing by ear, you know, bring in something new by ear every week, and just the other kids marvel at that. Another one might be the super best sight reader, put anything in front of them, they can read it. One might be the fastest and really the most coordinated. That you know, they are the ones who just whip through the pieces and breakneck speed. And another one might be just a great improviser, coming in with a new improvisation that all the students respect and, you know, marvel at every week. They get it that everybody has some talents that, you know, are especially, they're especially good at, and some things that can be improved. So we all have a feeling that we can support each other and also offer suggestions for, we're always looking to make improvements on what we can do. This is a very healthy thing, and it's great to learn it in music, and it carries over into every aspect of the student's life. Would you agree with that?
I certainly do.
Yeah. Now, on the Lee Roberts Music website, this is the website for the PACE materials and PACE approach. There's some great, here we have another caller checking in. No.
I've gone to a different room. No dog.
Yeah. the dog might be interested in the Bosco and Kitty book that...
Absolutely.
On the Lee Roberts Music website, there's three great articles. They're called monographs that Dr. Pace has written, which really show, you know, if you haven't read them, you will want to download those. To get at the heart of a lot of the PACE philosophy. One is called Sight Reading and Music Literacy. One is Improvisation and Creative Problem Solving. And one is on keyboard technique and effective psychomotor skills. So those are something that you should look at. There's also Cindy Pace has put some of his great articles on effective practicing, and each one of those gives you a good sense of Dr. Pace's, you know, how he came to create all this and what his mission is. Okay? So,
great thank
tool.
You.
Pardon me?
That's a great tool, you know, to be able to direct people to that website.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's LeeRobertsMusic.com.
Great. Thank you.
Now, the one article on sight reading, I think, explains how Dr. Pace got to teaching in this way. He was at Juilliard, and he was asked to teach, and he realized that many of the students he worked with at Juilliard came with a great playing repertoire ability and technical ability, but they were poor sight readers. Their sight reading was far below what they were playing, and they didn't understand the music that they were playing, so they didn't understand the theory components. They didn't know how to interpret, you know, based on what the music was doing harmonically and structurally, and so they weren't really getting a full picture, you know, enriched picture of the music. And at the same time, he thought about all the people, you know, he talked to who had years of study of piano lessons but couldn't play anything now and didn't know anything more about music than they had before they started. So he thought, why should we wait until college theory to learn about that music moves by steps and skips and, you know, some of those basic things that we learn in first-level theory? And couldn't we learn these things that would allow us to have a meaningful, lifelong relationship with music independent of a teacher at any stage that we might decide to discontinue lessons? So that is what his approach tries to do. It breaks the learning down into simple concepts that you can discover that you, you know, can build on throughout the course. So the first page of every PACE book, no matter what age it's designed for, whether it's Moppets, a four-year-old, or adults, begins with melodies may go up or down, as a simple concept or have repeated notes. Then we see that they can go by steps or by skips. And this, of course, is expanded to fourths and fifths and larger intervals as time goes on. Also, that music may be made of short and long sounds. Also, that it can have a steady beat. Then every song we look at forever, we study how does this song go up, down, or stay the same, and how does it have, how are the short and long sounds configured? Are they a 2-to-1 relationship or 3-to-1 relationship? If we put the steady beat with a rhythm pattern, we could create harmony. We learned that certain combinations of notes can be combined to create different types of harmony. So our little Moppets at 4-year-old begin to look at some black keys, put a steady beat on 2 black keys, and play a duet with their partner, and they begin to see the relative duration of certain notes, you know, to the steady beat, and they are also experiencing collaborating on music together at 4 years old. That's great. And then when they teach it to their parents, they become teachers at 4 years old. So we think that's pretty exciting. In this first session, we learn about the twin and triplet groupings of the black keys so that we can find the relative position of the A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. And we start with A, B, C, D, E, F, G because that's how the alphabet goes. And in this case, we can directly transfer that to the grand staff as, you know, as time goes on. Additionally, on the piano, we can see that from A to C is a skip in the alphabet, and it skips a key. And it's a very, easy process to see this on a linear way on the keyboard and also relate it to the staff. So we become very conscious of the twin and triplet groupings and the black and white relationship. And forever after, in playing, we use this keyboard geography to find our positions for notes in a song. For example, later when we're playing a Chopin waltz, we want to, as we're coming up from the low bass D-flat, for example, we want to get into a D-flat inverted chord. We want to get our, you know, zoom in on those twin black keys and make sure our second finger is landing on the bottom of the twin black keys, and then we'll be able to fall right into that chord. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So the twins and triplets are a part of finding our notes forever. But it starts at the first level, first lesson. We learn the first 5 notes of every scale and how they use the same pattern of half and whole steps so that we can find that pattern in any key and we can put a song in 12 different places from the beginning early levels. That's exciting. We learn to play in all keys. This is a multi-key approach from the beginning. And then all keys are comfortable to play in and accessible as part of our musical playground or toolbox. Early on, we learned that songs may have question and answer phrases of equal length, for example, 4-measure question, 4-measure answer, and that questions tend to end going up and answers come home to the home key. We learned that groups of notes can make a pattern. For example, a 3-note pattern of stepping up that we can then repeat in the second measure or sequence it on a note higher or invert it, turn it upside down. And we can use these patterns then to compose our questions and answers. We learn to recognize sequences and repeated patterns in our songs and make short work out of learning them because we see the groups of notes relating together instead of individual, isolated ones. So this is how we become able to learn a 32-page Beethoven sonata or concerto, is we see, you know, chords and structures and sequences and ABA form and, you know, all those structural components that make it not just learning individual isolated notes. So the cumulative effect of this study is very, very exciting. In our level one, later in the book, we learn the magical formula for harmonization. I call it the secret formula. I get the kids way in, you know, so we're all listening together, and I say, do you know, you want to hear the secret? And, you know, that, of course they do, you know. So if you, the formula is simply that in your five-finger pattern song, if you use, if you're using 1, 3, or 5 in your melody, then you would use the 1 chord for the accompaniment. If you're using 2 or 4, then you would go to the 5-7 chord. And this is so exciting because now you can bring in any song that's a 5-finger pattern, Ode to Joy, Alouette, at Christmas we do Jingle Bells or the Dreidel song. In March, we for Mardi Gras, we do Oh, When the Saints Go Marching In, those kind of things. And you can, you know, you can figure out how to harmonize with your bass. And, of course, you can do it in all 12 keys because we've learned to do that from the early stages. Not only that, but you can, we learned the simple idea that you move your middle finger down half a step, and then you've got all your 12 minor keys, too. Which is good at Halloween. And then once you have your solid chord, we can turn that into a broken chord bass, a waltz bass, Alberti bass, a march bass, an offbeat accompaniment, all these variations that composers use to dress up their song. So this is exciting from a standpoint of harmonizing a piece, but it's also, of course, the point is that when we see these structures, we can spot them in pieces. And in a sonatina, we can see the 1-5-1 chords, the Alberti bass, and it simplifies everything that we're doing because it breaks it down into patterns instead of individual notes. So some other elements of level one, we also explore roving triads kind of a bass where we're moving up like up the scale of C with triad notes, C, D minor, E minor, D minor, in a contemporary style. We have examples of Dorian songs, pentatonic, whole tone, everything in major and minor. And we explore the chords, scales in tetrachord form, and from a technique standpoint, we've learned many of the nuances of the five-finger patterns, of things that you have to do with technique. For example, one-hand staccato, one legato, crescendo and decrescendo, one-hand louder, one-hand softer, down-up phrasing, parallel and contrary motion within a scale. Dr. Pace wants us to be able to have the technique that you need to play your pieces so that when you get to the piece, for example, you need a waltz bass in a sonatina, like the Beethoven G major sonatina. You want to be able to have that waltz bass with the heavy light touch, you know, already refined and perfected from your technique so that when you pop it into the piece, you don't have to stop and figure out how to take the sound out of those second two notes to make it softer, but it's already there. The same with the down-up phrasing for that you need for Beethoven sonatas and Mozart sonatas. We want to build that into level one technique so it's already there. And let's see. So let me explain how the books are structured, and then I'm going to stop and ask if you have any questions so far. Okay?
Okay.
Music for piano presents short pieces that discover a concept. So they may be just 8 measures long. And the kids say, you know, what kind of piece is this? And I explain, well, it's not a... you know, it's not necessarily a piece you're going to play on a recital. It's a piece that we're going to learn something about music that is, you know, that's exciting. So the music for piano, we discover concepts about music. Creative music book, on the same page, corresponding page, we'll see a similar song with a slight variation. So perhaps where it skipped, a measure has skips in Music for Piano, it might have steps in Creative Music. So we'll look and see what's varied in here. It will be have some transposition ideas, so you'll play it in a couple of keys. Maybe it will be starting with the left hand instead of the right hand. On the right side of the page, of the two pages, it'll have something, a question that's in a similar style with a blank four measures that you have to complete the answer. And either in writing or just playing it. And then you'll be asked to create several different answers so that you try out different ways that the song can vary. Then in theory papers, is where we have our practice in writing these questions and answers, writing chords, writing key signatures, note names, all of the, so that the component of being able to write music is integrated into the curriculum. So you have in the four-book core series, you have tons and tons of examples of practicing these concepts. Then in the PACE Companion series, there are supplemental pieces and collections that give repertoire that highlight these concepts and constructions and examples of the kinds of styles that we're using in the core books. For example, Through the Keys is a little collection of pieces in level one where each is in a different key. There's a waltz in E-flat that has the 1 and 5/7 chords in waltz bass. You can play and transpose and make a new melody above that, or you can transpose it into different keys. There's a cowboy song in F-sharp pentatonic. There's a Highland Fling in pentatonic also. There's a song called Proclamation that has chords moving up and down the scale, like D, E minor, F, E, D. And there's a song, Follow the Leader, which is a little canon. And so that's how the Companion series gives repertoire to, fill out what you're learning in the books. So that's what level one is about. And in summary, everything you could possibly do with a 1 and 5/7 chord in all 12 keys, major and minor, and introduction of the full 8-note scales in tetrachord form. So I'm going to stop for a minute and see if you have any questions or comments at the moment. Or like you're going too fast or I can't hear you. Or
I have several questions.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all,
is it
Nargis? This is Nargis.
Okay.
Yes. I love everything that I've heard about this approach and what you're saying. And I haven't really used these books, but a lot of the way I teach, I already strive to incorporate a study technique that's similar to Dr. Pace's philosophy, even though I've never really studied his stuff.
Uh-huh.
And my question is, I've primarily taught, I've been teaching piano for like over 20 years, but I've primarily taught private lessons. And I'm intrigued by this idea of small group lessons. And I'm wondering like how one would shift to, like, if you have a studio full of private students, but you're buying into this idea of this peer learning is a great idea, how to get parents on board with that. And because, like you say, there are so many, in order to achieve comprehensive musicianship, there's so many things to squeeze into a lesson. And I like this idea of a longer lesson to accomplish everything. But actually, like the actual transition within a studio, from a private studio to small groups, I'm just wondering how and if you've worked with anybody on making that happen.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out a few ideas, and then I'm going to ask Kathy, also in Colorado, for her insight on that. It's well, I know, I figure you don't want to move, right, and start.
Right. Not yet.
Extreme. So I think. Do you do anything in? Do you have a like a once a month group, or do you do anything in where your kids?
I do groups. Yes, I do groups. Periodic group lessons, and we do like performance and ensemble and improvisation. I also teach jazz to my students, and jazz and blues. So we do like little blues ensembles and things like that. But that's just like once every 2 months, I think I do them.
And do you do any music games with them at that time?
No, it's more of a performance and ensemble opportunity.
So, well, there's a couple approaches. One is to, you know, the extreme one is simply to say to people that, you know, I just have been thinking about this, and I really believe this is a, you know, improved approach that I want to do. So this is what we're doing as of next fall. And, you know, you'll encounter some questions which we can give some good guidance for answers to those questions. In a less extreme approach, you might try to do all your summer in groups. Perhaps set up a little piano camp. It's which is really lessons, but I've found that if you call anything in the summer camp, it becomes sounds like more fun. even if you're just doing it in your studio as usual, but
right.
If you were to do a piano camp where they're like for 1 week, they were all coming maybe 3 hours in a morning or something like that. And you do it as a group,
mm-hmm.
and they maybe early, like in June, then they would see how fun it is. You know,
right.
Introduce it that way.
And
then another thing during the year is to, move to once a month group at least.
Yeah.
If you're trying to ease into it or, so those are the ideas is you just have to go whole hog into it.
Right.
Whole turkey. I'm trying to think of the expression. You quit cold turkey, but you go whole hog in, isn't it? So,
how long are the classes?
In length for each week, you mean?
Yes.
Well, in the pace approach, as he configured it, it is a half-hour dyad with a partner.
Mm-hmm.
So two kids or sometimes three are in a half-hour session, in which case they do the repertoire, ensemble. They help each other study repertoire. It can be they can be working on different pieces, but you analyze it together and study it together. They have a chance to work on duets. You
mm-hmm.
might look at, refining, practicing your technique together there. And then in the larger group, which could be maybe 6 to 8 people, for 45 minutes, you would do your technique, presentation technique all together. You could do your improvisation in a round robin style. You can do, that means like the teacher plays a question phrase and the first student doesn't answer. Then the teacher does the second phrase, the question doesn't answer to the the second student doesn't answer, and so forth. You can do your flashcard games and your dictation on the board, all of that kind of stuff in the larger group. Now,
so,
having said that, my students for all my teaching have come, my structure is an hour and 15-minute one 1 hour a week class, and I have typically 3 to 5 kids, 3 or 4 usually in a class, and
okay.
that's all they come that one time. So they're always in a group. It's a kind of a like a one room schoolhouse kind of, you know, where we're doing things all together, or we do little tiny breakout sessions for, you know, some times where we're working on our guided practice in our lessons, in our individual repertoire, or
uh-huh.
two students might be helping each other with a song that, you know, working on it together. So let's see what else we in.
Can I? So I thought yeah. I'd interject just a little from a marketing point of view,
okay.
that because this is some of the realities that parents are interested in. But
mm-hmm.
for instance, if you taking your kids a half hour lessons probably now, right?
45 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. If you were to, let's say, expand that lesson to an hour and say an hour and 15 minutes, but charge them the same price and took two kids, you can see what happens mathematically is that they're getting longer contact time for the same price.
Uh-huh.
So they're like, okay, but you're teaching, say, 15 minutes less, so there's some practicality there. And if you added a third kid to that lesson, you could very quickly see what that does economically.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But it's a way to ease them in because they're sort of like, oh, well, we get to come for, say, an hour and 15 minutes instead of 45 minutes for the same price, yet economically it still works out for you. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm just wondering about, I think parents like the idea of their kids getting individual attention as opposed to in the group.
You know, they think they do. if you're switching from one to the other, they're probably not used to anything else. But
uh-huh.
at this point, my students come because they hear how much fun it is. And
yeah.
they enjoy the comprehensive nature that, you know, that we're creating practical musicians. And
uh-huh.
all they hear about is that it's fun and the kids enjoy it. And they,
uh-huh.
These days, the idea of children doing things together is very, Serena Mackey at MTNA was talking about how when she has her daughter asks for a friend to come over for a sleepover, she says she doesn't want one girl, she wants the whole pack of them, and that
right.
they, you know, they do things in packs. So
mm-hmm.
social connection is what kids, you know, is very much a trend these days.
Yeah.
So thanks, Reno. That was a very good point to speak about the practical nature. Kathy, do you have any insights?
A couple of thoughts on transitioning. When I did it, I just sat down shaking on the piano bench and told everybody that's what we were going to do.
that might be what I have to do.
Yeah, that was a long time ago, too, and schedules
uh-huh.
were different.
Yeah.
As life progressed and years progressed, I live out in the country in the mountains, and students came from fair distances sometimes, so what was practical for me was to schedule partners on either side of a 4-student group, so a 2-4-2, and so they would come for a 30-minute partner lesson and then stay for a 45-minute group lesson. And parents liked that because the kids were here longer. They could go somewhere and get their groceries or do their errands.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the students that might come early and were waiting could be working on a music theory program on the computer,
mm-hmm.
Or even getting their homework done before they get home.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked well for me. And there's still a lot of that sense of individual attention
mm-hmm.
because of the partner lesson.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually getting two teachers because they're getting you and they're getting their partner. And
mm-hmm.
that literally got some of my students through high school without quitting.
Yeah.
So that's my
yeah.
input.
Yeah.
Do you find it difficult to schedule these? I guess you know once you're up and rolling, it's easier. But I guess I'm imagining like it's very difficult to schedule lessons in general with all the millions of activities that kids are involved in these days, and then trying to get the kids that are on the same or around the same level in a group lesson to, you know, when to find a time during the week where they're both available or where a small group is available.
No question, it's a challenge.
Yeah,
that's the part that makes us all want to quit, you know, when it's scheduling time. It's just,
yeah.
But then once we get it settled, you know, and then they come in and they're just coming in with these creative ideas that are just coming from every corner. You know, everybody comes in with new ideas for games and, you know, showing off their latest accomplishments. And they bring, you know, their flutes in or their recorders. They're just, you know, and we work out accompaniments, and they, you know, they just giggle with laughter over the games, and, you know, they're comfortable playing in front of each other and therefore in front of other people. And when their teachers at school say, who's going to, you know, who wants to play for the assembly, their hands are up first because they're not shy at all about playing. You know, these are things that make us, you know, stick through the scheduling problem, because we know it's so, it's such a rewarding way to, as I say, become collaborative musicians and, you know, really be practical musicians and know how to make music on all,
levels. I'll interject one more scheduling idea, and then I have to hang up because I have an appointment. And that is, you know, at a minimum, if you start your newest students, if you interview them and start them with the idea of partners in groups or a long group or whatever you think works best in your area, and then for your older students, just see if you can partner them as many of, as you can.
Yeah.
And work that way. It's so different area to area. But,
yeah, that sounds good, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, thanks so much for letting me listen in. I have to go to an appointment, but I really enjoyed this.
Thank you for all your great suggestions.
Bye.
Okay, Kathy, great. Good to talk to you. Bye-bye. I think she's gone. So, okay, well, I'm going to go on to level two to make sure that we get the content of that, too.
Sounds good.
Okay, so level two continues. Let's see, the melodies begin to move. Charapnin, are you doing okay there?
Yeah, I do have one question. How do you deal with the differences in the students' abilities? Let's say, for example, they all start together in level one, and you know, they have different speed of learning and what they want. And then as they move on to different levels, how do you deal with some people want to go faster, some people are kind of lagging behind? And another question is, how far does group lesson can take the students, at what level? And another thing is that there may be some skills that you need to sit down and maybe show the students more detail than others, and how do you deal with that kind of thing?
Okay, those are all very good questions that people have about this. Let's see, let me just put that in my little back burner for a second, and then I'll come back to that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're going to stick around for the whole hour?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. So I just want to get this content out, and then I'll make sure I leave room for that.
That's more important.
Pardon me?
See, that's more important, because I would like to know about all the content that you have today, and those questions can be answered, you know, when you have the time.
Yeah, they're very important. So level two is the melodies incorporate a six-note range, so then we that gives us an opportunity to discover the need for the four chord, which, you know, you would use when your melody goes to the sixth note. And we explore logical fingering patterns for, you know, a song that uses. In other words, we're learning about basic fingering, grouping, and patterns from the five finger to a six note stretch, and then to incorporating the whole octave. And we have the diminished chords. The songs use the upper half of the scale more inclusively. And we have examples of linear harmony in parallel tenths and sixths. And that's very helpful in looking at, you know, Bach inventions and, you know, leading up to that, some Schumann pieces that we have short, long phrase construction, like two measure, four measure phrase construction. And then there's still tons of questions and answers, many styles, again, Dorian, Phrygian, roving triads, bitonal, blues, even 12-tone. The technique covers all the scale fingering for one octave scales in all keys, which goes pretty fast since students already know the scales in tetrachord form. And we have Hannon in all keys. Now, this level two is combined in the training, in the second training session in the summer with Kinder Keyboard. Kinder Keyboard is a program for 6 to 7-year-olds, maybe late 5-year-olds, too. All the concepts are presented in the same way, beginning with music goes up by steps and skips, short and long notes, transposing, major and minor, Dorian, pentatonic, grand staff note presentation. But there's lots of creative play and play a story ideas, you know, for improvisation, songs that are for a younger age, pictures you can even color if you want to, and songs that are highly patterned. We often use flashcards that have repeating patterns of the song separated out, so you can mix them up and put them in order on the floor, or have a stuffed animal follow the pattern, you know, by physically feeling the rhythm with the stuffed animal on the notes and tracking the notes. And the kids can see that the songs are made up of these patterns that repeat, sequence, and invert. And there's lots of movement because little six-year-olds, after they've been, you know, in school all day, need to move around. So we have a lot of fun with that. So this course would give, this second training course in July, would give a little bit of a sense of activities for younger students and also see you where level one has progressed into level two. The first course would be level one, presentation, and the music for Moppets, which is for the 4 and 5-year-olds. And music for Moppets is about, let me find that here. It's a very playful program with an unhurried environment for students to explore and play with music concepts the same way they play with other toys. Toys being musical concepts, by trying out different ideas in different situations. So we use rhythm instruments, xylophones, creative movement, elephant marches, scarf movements to feel the long flowing lines and experience the up and down of an airplane ride, singing, some coloring, acting out of the songs, 4 keyboards where they can step the songs up the keys, or group the animals, stuffed animals, in 2s and 3s on the twins and triplets, and find the ABCs, you know, things like that. We look at every song in terms of how it goes up or down or has repeated notes, if it goes by steps or skips. We transpose it right away. We put a steady beat accompaniment right away with it. We improvise new melodies over the song once we've learned it, or new words. And in short, we capitalize on all the things that little kids love to do naturally as we develop an understanding of music concepts, musical, you know, terminology, and begin the process of thinking musically, or being very intuitive musicians. So it's a very fun, playful program, and that's what the students enjoy about it. And so that's level one in Moppets is the first session. Level two in Kenya Keyboard is the second session. And then level three is the level three pace books, which add the introduction of the two chord and 1-4-2-5-1 chord progression in all inversions, which is quite a chunk of stuff to learn, you know, one step at a time, augmented chords. And the repertoire goes, every four pages, it goes through the four historic periods, Baroque, classical, romantic, contemporary. So you get a healthy balance in many different styles. You have a lot of ABA form pieces. We get very accustomed to, you know, song, how songs move from the tonic to the dominant and then back to the tonic. And there are more descriptions of what's in three. If you go to the description of the courses at the Lakeshore Music Studio website. So I don't have training for level four, but, you know, because I can't pack that much in the summer, but you can get a sense of how level four continues even more into what you would be expecting to learn in college theory and, you know, pretty much apply to any piano repertoire at that point. So let me just see if I got my notes covered on the pace.
Julie, your voice gets cut off.
Oh, I'm getting a little bit. Okay, I'll keep talking.
Okay, it's fine now.
So in short, Dr. The training course will cover, you know, obviously we can't cover everything that, every aspect of every page of the PACE curriculum in this time period of 3 days per session, but we try to hit the major concepts and also show you how you can explore the books to find what is in each page and give you teaching ideas and strategies for how to present these to a group, whether it's a group of two people or a group of six, and also, you know, the conceptual way of looking at music. So whether you're doing it with one individual, you still can see how to extract the concepts and apply them to not just the repertoire and the PACE materials, but any repertoire, any standard repertoire. We'll do a lot of games and, you know, things that have developed on a practical basis from people like me who have been teaching this on a day, you know, day-to-day for many years. So that's what the benefit of taking a course like this with a consultant is, that you know, we try to give you very practical, you know, teacher-to-teacher ideas. And we also get ideas from each other, which is what I love about it. So Dr. Pace's mission, in short, was to create literate musicians and people who can enjoy a lifetime of music and become their own teachers at no matter what point they, you know, they move up to in their piano level, and to create, you know, versatile, well-rounded musicians who have a rich appreciation that includes a theoretic understanding. And that's what he devoted his life to, you know, his life to doing. So we think it's a very exciting way to learn and hope you will come and find out about it. Now, if you take the courses, you should, as I said, get the articles from Lee Roberts to study, you know, pre-study, a little bit of his philosophy. I'll send a list of the books needed, which would be basically the core books and the teacher's manuals. I have some recommended flashcards. You can get the books from either, you know, from your dealer, or I can have them available for you to get when you get here. Or you can get them from Lee Roberts Music directly or from Hal Leonard's website. And if you are planning to come or thinking of it, let me know so we can plan together. You know, we may have some ideas on, certainly on hotels and, you know, things we might want to plan together. At the completion, you'll get a certificate from International Piano Teaching Foundation that says you're certified, and listing on my website, Lakeshore Music Studios website of PACE teachers, and also the Lee Roberts Music website. So that's what I want to present about the PACE approach, and now I want to address the idea of how do you deal with students of different levels. And the answer is that basically they do need to be sort of on the same page in terms of, you know, if you're presenting new material, new theory material or technique material, they should be basically in the same place there. From the standpoint of technique and or how fast they actually pick up material, I believe there's room for variation in that. I have students together who play quite a bit different material, but they can, but they're still learning their theory concepts at the same rate. So that part is the part that stays the same. Now, you know, there's many ways that you can keep the person who's moving, who's a little bit more adept, comfortable. For example, if your example that you're studying is a little eight-measure question and answer with chords, and one person is still struggling to coordinate the chords with the melody, that might be something where, you know, that person can only play the melody and the partner can play the chords with the person. Or if you're practicing that kind of independently in the class, the fast student who already gets the exercise, you can encourage them to try it in another key. Or if they have their 1 and 5 chords down, you can encourage them to try it with a waltz bass or a broken chord bass. Or you can try them, you know, have them make a variation. Or they can always go on to the next example. So even within working on the same little pattern or lesson study, there's room for always moving one step further while the other one is still coping with what they can do physically.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And from a standpoint of repertoire, if you're, you know, they can play different pieces. One may be, we do a sound sample typically where I sit them down with little pieces of paper and I'll play a sampling of maybe 10 or 12 pieces, and they write down what they like. And then I look at them later after the class, and from that I can get a sense of what kind of pieces they like. So within the range of repertoires that would complement what we're working on in theory and technique at this point in the books, they can, you know, somebody might be doing a sonatina that's quite a bit more complex than somebody else who can't handle that as much. But we can still look at the chords and the upper and lower neighbors and the structures in a way that, you know, ties into what we're learning. Now, in the case that they are grossly, you know, one just outpaces the other ones, then we can, hopefully, if you have enough healthy groups at one level, say you have 4 or 5 people at a similar level, you can regroup. You know, sometimes you have to regroup. There's a real vast difference.
Hello?
Yeah. So that's kind of some of the answers to that. And how far they can go, it really, they can go into upper levels of my groups. You know, as Kathy mentioned, it's having them in groups in high school is some of the reasons that some of the kids stay in music, because, you know, they love that reinforcement of being with their friends.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, because they learn the components of music, they can absorb bigger piece. I mean, they can absorb more complex pieces quicker, and they do a lot of independent reading on their own. So the coaching and the refining and so forth, there may be times when you have to, you know, give a little extra time to somebody, you know, if they're working up for a competition or something. But they still can get the, you know, so much out of working together.
Julie, let me give you like a 2-minute warning. So we're
okay.
Last 2 minutes.
And the last question was showing students, Terrapin, I didn't quite get that. You mean if you're showing, demonstrating something to a student?
No, I didn't write down my question either.
I have a quick question, hopefully. Yeah. It's just a quick one. How long does it do you take to get through each level within the theory?
Yeah, that's a good question. Probably, I think each book has about 42 pages. 36 to 42. So it's designed sort of to correspond to a school year. However, that would be, you know, if you're moving at optimal speed, optimal practicers, you know, everything is just, you're just really racing through. And I, for myself, we take easily 2 years on level one, 2 years on level two, because we just take a lot, you know, we take our time to get stuff really well learned, and we do, you know, add in other repertoire and things like that. And but you just, likewise, we take 2 years for the Moppets and 1 year for Kinder Keyboard. But you know, you just know when they know it really solid, then you're ready to move on to the next level. So it's not a problem if you, you know, spend a couple of years on a level.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So you go at the pace of the group, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Right.
So it's not like, you know, we're going to do this lesson, this next lesson, so forth, regardless of what's happening.
Yeah. I mean, you're always thinking on a forward-moving track, but,
of course, yeah.
You know, but you have to adjust it to the group and what you're, you know, what's coming up in your year. On a practical level, there's just so many things that come up in a, you know, in musical lives.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, but because you have a structure and you're moving forward, you know, you always know where you are and that you have something you're moving forward to. So you do kind of push them along, too, in that way. Mm-hmm. So I think it's time to wrap up. It's been our hour, and I hope that we will see you this summer. Terrapin, you know you can come and visit sometime. We can talk.
Yes,
about
I would love to do that. Yeah. I think this is a wonderful way of teaching students, and I came from an old traditional background, and I see a lot of advantages in this.
Yeah. So what is resonating with you what makes?
Well, I never really studied theory until maybe in my fourth year of playing music.
Uh-huh.
And during that time, I kind of picked up harmonies and things by myself, and I didn't really know what they were. I wish I had known earlier, and I have met a lot of piano players who played fantastically, but they don't have a lot of idea about what they're playing.
Uh-huh.
They don't really understand harmony. They can't do sight reading and things like that. And I think this is such a wonderful preparation. I'm really impressed.
Great. Okay. I
was going to interject at Terrapin that what you just said could have come right out of Dr. Pace's mouth, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, thank
you.
Uh-huh. That's absolutely his mission. He voiced it, so. Okay, so, thank you very much for attending the seminar. It's so great to meet you by phone and for us to talk together. So we'll follow up with other questions and, you know, email and so forth, and hope we can get together this summer.
Wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much. This was really informative. I appreciate that you had this hour for us.
Well, great. We're hoping to have it recorded, so if you want to listen to it again, you can. We'll get the information out to you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And to everybody
Thank
else
you.
Who might listen later, PACE consultants and teachers and new people who are interested, hello to you, and we'll talk. We'll talk soon. Okay. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.